Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the 18th episode of the What If Football 2022 World Cup Daily Podcast. I am Jake, here presenting for you the first day of the last 16, where we saw the Netherlands and Argentina on a collision course with Louis van Gaal's army going into the quarterfinals, and Lionel Messi in his 1,000th professional appearance drag La Albiceleste to another quarterfinal, and they will be bound at the quarterfinals. Let's review everything and preview today's game. Let's get stuck in. We're here on the Sports Social Podcast Network, anywhere, really, where you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube here with the World Cup Daily Podcast. We've also got other podcasts too, the World Cup Great Games every single day, chattering the history of great World Cup games over on Patreon. We're also on YouTube, we've got Football Manager Challenges, Predictors, Combined Elevens, and of course, Alternate Football Universes with our What If videos. And let's start where today's action all started, and that was at the Khalifa International Stadium between the Netherlands and USA. The Dutch went into things unchanged. Meanwhile, USA were thankful for Christian Pulisic's return. Meanwhile, they welcomed back Walker Zimmerman into the defence, and Jesus Ferreira, he was given a first run out in front of goal as a number nine. The Netherlands were never really going to stray away from the 4-3-4-1-2 formation. This is Louis van Gaal, after all. Meanwhile, USA, under Greg Berhalter, well, slightly more unpredictable. It could be a 4-3-3, could be a 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2. It was more of a 4-3-3 with that dynamic midfield of Yunus Musa, of Weston McKennie, and Tyler Adams. They were all in there, and the question was really that, could USA go that one step further? Could they equal 2002 in that quarterfinal exit to Germany? Could they continue that energy? And the midfield really was as rapid as ever. The counter-pressing was still there, is what they always do. They started life off in this game quite well, winning the ball in the attacking third for Christian Pulisic's chance, which looked for all the world to be offside, but Daley Blind was slow in tracking back, and well, he was thwarted by Noppert, so got to go down as a chance squandered, really, for the Americans. Pulisic was just as tireless as the midfield. He's found him behind a couple of times in the first stage of the game. The Dutch defence was being penned back, but you got the sense, really, that this is how they wanted the game to go. They were being patient, they were playing the long game, and perhaps really a measure of experience, certainly in the dugout. Of course, this Dutch team never really have any quarterfinal experience. Is the odd name, of course, Daley Blind and Memphis Depay, who were both part of the World Cup squad that reached the semi-finals in 2014. But the rest of them, they've only got really the last summer's Euros, which they came unstuck at this very stage. And for many, it'll be new waters, really, the quarterfinals against Argentina to come. On the other side of things, you had perhaps the abandon of a more youthful team going into this, a bit more headstrong, unwilling to change their game and pressing, being all that energetic that under 25s in this game have. To be fair to USA, they didn't stop. It was a great blend of styles. The Netherlands essentially waiting for the moment to pounce, to pick their opponents off. The problem I felt that the United States had was probably the fact that they didn't have more of a Frankie de Jong figure to dictate the play, really. Because you got Tyler Adams, he will hold things together. He will be as energetic as Weston McKennie, as Yunus Musa, and run all day for you. But essentially what the United States don't have is a player that will go box to box and be able to slow things down if needed. USA don't necessarily have that. It's 100 or zero, essentially, especially in games like this. They did show promise when they moved away from the plan. You've got Weah fizzing a long shot in. You've got Serginho Dest slaloming with those underlapping runs, which were fairly dangerous in the first half. And from isolated situations, like Tim Ream from a corner, cleared off the line. It's always a good avenue for teams that are underdogs in tournaments like World Cups, like European Championships. And unfortunately, his chance was cleared off the line. And so too, Hadji Wright picking up a poor Memphis Depay back pass, and Denzel Dumfries was able to clear his shot off the line from a very, very tight angle. And the resulting corner, a bit of a second phase ball, Hadji Wright somehow flicks the ball behind him and it somehow goes into the top corner of the net. Denzel Dumfries a bit slower to clear that one, although I think it was a little bit impossible, much like the finish really, which was ever so slightly fortunate, but we'll pass that by. And it set up your stereotypical Hollywood grandstand finish. Threatened to play into the Americans' hands until Denzel Dumfries ghosted in with the freedom of Al Rayyan, I think he is, and ghosted in the back post, scored with his shin to make it 3-1. But really, the Dutch, they were, apart from that last, for about 4 minutes when it was 2-1, they were largely in control of this game. They may have not had all the shots, all the possession, but Louis van Gaal, he played the long game and it worked to an absolute fault, really. Cody Gakpo continued his form. It was probably one of his better performances, even though he didn't get that fourth goal to go ahead on his own in the Golden Boot standings. The Netherlands, though, they haven't been that great in the final third, but I think when they had the chances, they picked USA off and they were very clinical in front of goal, I felt. Cody Gakpo was at the heart of most of it. He strung together the defence and the attack for the first goal, dropped in and powered forward with the ball, handing things to Denzel Dumfries, who created two, scored the other, of course. Both from cutbacks, first for Memphis Depay, and of course then Daley Blind in first half stoppage time, which is a real sickener for the Americans, really. Cody Gakpo was assisting Daley Blind for a bit of a poor chance as well, as the Dutch grew into the game in the first half. He was stretching the defenders, pulling wide, mainly to the right, to stretch the American defence, which I felt were quite slow in between them, between Tim Ream and Walker Zimmerman. Because with Serginho Dest and with Anthony Robinson, they're going to have to bomb on and create that whip for themselves. It's just all about whether or not they can track back. And if they can't, then they've got two slower centre-halves and albeit a tireless Tyler Adams in front of them. But with a counter-attacking team like the Dutch, as clinical as they were, be easily stretched, and they were in this game. Gakpo moved into the number 10 position with Steven Bergwijn's half-time substitution, and it only increased their transitional nature. And I felt really in the second half, the Dutch weren't as, they were a bit more positive in the play, but I think that was slightly detrimental towards the entire game plan. I think they felt that the game was more or less up because the United States were a bit blunt in attack, in all fairness, and couldn't really break down the Dutch. It was a bit more end-to-end in the second half, which suited the Americans more. They wanted the transitional game. Instead, in the first half, they were met with a bit of a Dutch patient mid-block, which is exactly what Louis van Gaal would have wanted. But unfortunately for the Americans, didn't have the tools or the experience to break them down. And what they came up against was a team proficient in counter-attacking. Really, the mid-block thwarted America. It was Jesus Ferreira coming deep from centre forward, leaving really no attacking threat. Gio Reyna, his substitute at halftime, not really much either. He's not really a false nine. I thought maybe Pulisic would have gone to the false nine position, but he was often outnumbered on the left. He didn't really stray from the left either. He cut in a couple of times if he was found in behind, but very little else from the man they call Captain America. And yeah, the USA, let's be fair, they're a work in progress. The last 16 for me, for them, is a giant success, getting out of what was a pretty tricky group. That can only be a success with such a young team, and this is a sandbox for 2026. In terms of the Netherlands, well, for me, it was a tournament win with a manager that very much had a plan, that is very much stuck to his beliefs, and now has a chance to banish some ghosts from 8 years previously, when they were beaten by Argentina in the semi-finals via penalty shootout. And speaking of Argentina, we'll take on their game with Australia after this short break. Welcome back. Argentina 2, Australia 1. Argentina brought Papu Gomez in and they continued with the 4-3-3, or rather a lopsided 4-4-2. Angel Di Maria dropping out, but it looks as though he could be returning for the quarter-final with the Netherlands. Meanwhile, Australia, Keanu Backus was in for Craig Gordon, and it was very much a 4-4-2, more 4-5-1, depending on how adventurous Jackson Irving was being in being the man appointed to be second striker there. And it was going into the game, well, the tournament was deemed an impossible task, this game. A free hit, what Mark Schwartz has said in build-up, and he was right, exactly right. Last 16, they've already equaled their best ever showing at a World Cup, and it's Argentina, a mammoth opponent in front of them. So, yes, an impossible task. How could they possibly win this against the might of Messi and his 1,000th appearance and all the narrative that ran through that? Well, you've got Harry Soutaru, yes, brilliant, absolutely brilliant defender, and I think he performed quite admirably again tonight, but his long balls in build-up could be an avenue for Australia. You've got the industry of Aaron Moy in front of that defence. You've got Riley McGree's incessant running. I think he's gone a little bit under the radar. I think he's had a fairly good tournament, really. Jackson Irving's good in the air as that second striker to knock things down. And another one that will, like most of these Australians, will just run and run and run. And, of course, Harry Suter from set pieces. He went up top for the end of the game as the proverbial big man up top, lump it into him and see what can happen. But really, Australia, the most part of their game for this game was going to be the compactness of those two banks of four and a four and a five, and breaking the play up, trying to frustrate the Argentinians. And whilst you do have that, you've also got the left-back Behic. He does like to get up and go on a few runs. We saw it towards the end of the game, but he's shown it all tournament. He's been one of the... he's been quite a few sort of underrated left backs. We've seen the likes of Kim Jin-soo, you've got Pervis Estupinan, and of course Behic here, who I felt was great again today. Could have made himself a bit of a hero in stoppage time, but unfortunately that wasn't to be the case. Argentina in the second half, they did let them play a little bit. They're probably not really in the pressing game them, and it was really one move, or really one absolute freak of a goal, that was needed by Australia in this game. Sadly enough, though, for the Socceroos, it came when the game felt done. For the most of the second half, the game felt done at 2-0, as Craig Goodwin shanked a shot. He's going well wide, and unfortunately Enzo Fernandez couldn't move in time, and it squirts into the opposite corner with Emi Martinez beating Hollands up. And that was the spark that lit a frenzied last 25 minutes with stoppage time. And unfortunately, they could not get it done, but they had two glorious chances, did Australia. And to be fair, in the end-to-endness of the game developed into great grandstand finish. We thought we had one of the Netherlands and USA, but this one was even better. But to be fair, we had a pretty turgid 70 minutes before that Australia goal. We had Behich with that incredible run, which I mentioned before. We had Garang Kuyol, who had a glorious chance in the 97th minute, the last chance of the game, virtually the last touch of the ball, and he turns a defender, and he's got Emi Martinez to beat, but Peter Schmeichelski comes starfishing out to meet him and blocks it, which was, it was going in as well, and that would have been, for the 18-year-old to take Argentina to extra time, it would have been a great moment in World Cup football. Regardless, it was a fantastic finish to what was an otherwise pretty poor game. It went exactly the way you may expect, and with Argentina playing less than stellar international football, a bit like what we've been saying about the Netherlands, although I think they've improved in their standings from today's football. Argentina have sort of been on the same middling road. They'll have the odd appearance like this where it's coasting off the back of Messi or a good solid tournament win. This was probably a bit of both. And to be fair, Lionel Scaloni's evolved the team throughout the competition. We were all expecting Lautaro Martinez to come up with the goods in the group stage. I personally had him on for the Golden Boot winner, which looks foolish when he's out of the team now for Julian Alvarez, which I think is the right decision based on the form of the entire competition. But it's made even more foolish by the fact that team missed three glorious chances in the injury time at the end of the second half. But there we are. Alvarez, as a result, I felt miles better than Lautaro throughout this game and really brings a breath of fresh air to this Argentinian team. His long balls that he would meet over the back of the defence, that seemed like one of the only avenues outside of the obvious, which we'll certainly come on to. In the first sort of 15 minutes, the first shot was on the 17th minute mark from Argentina, wildly over from Papu Gomez. And really, the first half an hour, you did not miss a single thing. Obviously, tactically, somewhat interesting, I suppose, trying to figure both teams out, figure out what they're trying to do. But in terms of the actual football and shots and tackles, etc., actual match events, very thin on the ground in the first half an hour. Messi was coming ridiculously deep. Australia were funneling the Argentine attack wide. They were very, very happy to stand off and let them play football, as you would expect. And it meant centrally things were very congested, obviously quite a narrow back four. The midfield was incredibly narrow as well for Australia, and Argentina simply had to go and use the wide areas. That is essentially where the first goal comes from a throw-in after a bit of needle between Behich and Messi, which fired the crowd up, fired the game up, really, because from that you get a bit of a second phase. And then, of course, Messi receives a ball from, I think, Alvarez, and one touch curls it into the bottom corner, and then the game is well and truly lit from a moment of Messi magic. Took a little bit less time than it did in the Mexico match, but this game had a very similar feel to that 2-0 win over Mexico, and would have shared the same result had that freak Australia goal not gone in towards the end. It was Papu Gomez on the left. You had Alexis McAllister would go forward centrally, obviously, to take up the spot vacated behind Messi as he was trying to dictate the pace. In the midfield, Julian Alvarez would join in central areas as well, with fairly attacking fullbacks, as you would expect in a game that was slanted towards this for Argentina. First half, though, was really laboured, languid. Argentina's football wasn't great, and really the theme of this World Cup for Argentina so far is this whole reliance on Messi, and of course, he delivered the goods, as we mentioned, before the halftime break. And the second half, Argentina, they were handed, gift-wrapped, that second goal. Matt Ryan's horrendous error, unfortunately. And then, Julian Alvarez sticks away that chance. And once Argentina were 2-0 up with the pressure off and the game fairly won like you would expect, like a bit like Netherlands in the second half of the earlier game, they came out to play a bit more. And, well, whilst the Netherlands abandoned their game plan of sitting off and waiting for the United States to make a mistake and then pounce. Here, Argentina's plan was to attack Australia, so they did so at will. You know, Messi was pulling out all kinds of filthy manoeuvres, laying things onto teammates who could not finish for the life in them. Regardless, in terms of Argentina, 2-1 win here, yeah, the through to the quarterfinals, it was by no means that impressive. I would put them on a similar gauge as the Netherlands, really. We've not really seen we're not really seeing many teams push to the limit so far. There's not really a standout performer. It is after all the beginnings of the last 16. On performances, you'll probably say Argentina round about that second tier of contenders alongside a Portugal and Netherlands as well. I felt that Argentina were unlucky against Saudi Arabia. They coasted off Messi in the Mexico win, and Poland was more of a win you'd expect of an incoming World Cup winner. Here, it was, like I mentioned earlier, a mix of the Mexico and Poland performances, and really, only results matter now. If you take a look at the last few winners of the World Cup, they've all had to scrape through a last 16. France, 4 years ago, it was a 4-3 win over Argentina, which probably more of a 4-3 game in terms of the performance, but that's what the scoreline said. And this wasn't a 2-1 win by any means. It was only ground down into quite a close contest because of that ridiculous goal that we saw. And even in like 2014, you had Germany taken to the brink of extra time by Algeria. Spain were taken to the brink by Portugal in a 1-0 win. So you don't really have teams battering through, eventual champions battering through opponents in this last 16. It's all about results. You don't get 3-0s all over the shop and they just waltz to the title. That doesn't happen. So, and with Messi, you always have that little trick in your back pocket, don't you? That wonder kid, as he is. And the only thing that probably splits Argentina and the Netherlands right now in terms of their chances going forward, in terms of the quarterfinal to come, is that the Netherlands do not have a player like Lionel Messi. That is quite obvious to see. They may have a couple of players that are verging on world class. Of course, we've seen the best of Cody Gakpo recently, but Lionel Messi is an entirely different beast altogether. Who will join Argentina and the Netherlands in the quarterfinals? Well, we've got a couple of more games to preview for you after this short break. We've got England versus Senegal and France versus Poland. Stay with us. Welcome back. Let's start with France-Poland. Let's feel a little crazy, shall we? Anyway, everybody's writing off Poland, perhaps rightly so. Their group stage is fairly timid, turgid displays. Defensively, not much to write home about either in terms of you see the likes of Morocco doing quite well defensively. You see Australia doing quite well defensively in certain games. Poland, though, I think they'll suffer the same fate that Australia did in the group phases. When one goal goes in, you'll likely see Lewandowski isolated, as he was against Argentina, and you'll likely see a Polish defence quick to crumble against attackers who are probably a bit more nimbler than what Argentina have in their locker. Of course, I'm talking about Kylian Mbappe, who will perhaps relish the task of taking on Matty Cash, etc. Kamil Glick, that could be a bit of a mismatch for the ages. But this is a 2022 World Cup. We've seen how Poland can wilt against that quick transitional attack. You see Mbappe coming up against that Polish defence. I can think of only one serious outcome here, unless it is France. You never know. Likewise, it's European Championships 18 months ago, they crashed out to so-called inferior opposition who somehow turned up attacking-wise when they never normally do in Switzerland. Now we know that's not to be traditionally the case in terms of this tournament. Anyway, we'll talk about Switzerland on another day. But every fibre of my being says France win over Poland. I think that's probably because I don't have that national bias going into it. Likewise with England, I never feel as though we'll run away with it or stroll it. We've got the clamour. The clamour always will continue for England through Phil Foden, through Jack Grealish, through Marcus Rashford. And they've all been given their chances, to be fair to Gareth Southgate. They've all got on the score sheet as well, bar Harry Kane and Callum Wilson. So it's a fantastic problem to have for Gareth Southgate. And I think their bench options, their flexibility, I think is only rivaled really with Brazil, if not to put England on too much of a pedestal. I think at the back, nobody's been talking about it because it's not really fashionable to praise Harry Maguire, but I think he's rekindled that international form with John Stones, form centre-back of the tournament, maybe alongside Harry Suter, his Australian equivalent in more ways than one. And with Kyle Walker coming back into the fold and perhaps a reversion back to the back three, I don't think it'll be in any way negative to deploy the back three in this situation. I've got pretty high hopes for England in this tournament going forward, perhaps too high, but one game at a time. Senegal will be tricky, even without Sadio Mane. I think definitely should not be underestimated. England do not have a good record against African teams. Senegal are composed. They've got fantastic tournament experience, not just from World Cups, but the most recent African Nations Cup. They are African champions, after all. They've been through hell and back to not only qualify for this tournament, but to win that, beating Egypt on penalties on both occasions. So we should know now that England and penalties don't go. And when you come up against a team led by Edouard Mendy in net, don't get to penalties with this team, because they will lose. And one of the better off the ball teams as well, one of the better defensive teams, really. And thankfully for England, Senegal will be without Idrissa Gana Gueye as well as Sadio Mane, but still should be feared and should give England an almighty test, similar as Gareth Southgate mentioned in his media recently. Should be a test not too dissimilar to the United States, which has been the only time England failed to win in this competition. And in fact, England go into the knockout phase as somehow the best performing team in the group phase, after nobody picked up 9 points from nine, and a bit of goal difference here or there has helped England achieve that feat. So we've got one hell of a Sunday, Super Sunday almost, for you, with hopefully a happy ending for England at the end of it. But until then, thank you very much for listening. We'll be, of course, be back with all four of these, all two of these games tomorrow to review. One half will be sober, I imagine, but hopefully the other half will attempt to be analytical regardless. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for watching if you have done on YouTube. And until tomorrow, thank you, and see the, of course, up the three lions. Podcast Network.